Fantasy football season is back, baby. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. So listen and follow Fantasy Football Happy Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Summer's here, the roads are packed, and accidents can happen in an instant. If you've been injured in a car accident, don't get stuck fighting the insurance companies alone. Fight back with one call to Azari Law. Call 888-828-HURT. That's 888-828-HURT. At Azari Law, we've proudly fought for the DMV community for over 15 years. I'm attorney Lauren Kalekas, born and raised right here in the DMV, and my team and I are ready to fight for you. Injured? Don't wait. Don't settle for less than you deserve. With offices in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, Azari Law is standing by to help accident victims get the justice and compensation they deserve. This summer, protect yourself and your family by knowing who to call when life takes an unexpected turn. Call 888-828-HURT, 888-828-HURT, and let Azari Law fight for you. Follow us on social media at azari.law. That's AZARI.law.
Anybody, anywhere, anybody.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command with Logan Paulson, who spent a decade in the NFL. I'm Grant Paulson. You can listen to me each and every day from 2 to 6:30 on 106.7 The Fan. The Take Command podcast is a video pod. You can watch us on YouTube on the 106.7 The Fan and Team 980 YouTube channels. Logan, the roster has been formed. We broke it down on our last pod. A couple of days have passed. And to this point, the Commanders have not added much to the roster. They didn't put in any waiver claims successfully, and none of their players got claimed. So let's start with that. Are you surprised that none of the guys Washington claimed, released, got claimed? I thought a couple of the players that they cut would. Normally that's an endorsement or indictment of kind of the talent that you're cutting. What'd you make of that?
Who did you think would get picked up? Just curious.
Van Jefferson, for sure. I thought, when we watched that Dolphins joint practice, I thought he could start for the Dolphins. So that one really surprised me. Generally, I'm a guy that thinks most guys can get to the practice squad, but that was, you cut a veteran like that, Campbell, Harris, you kind of think those guys will land pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think like with those guys, Will Harris and Van Jefferson, I think sometimes those guys end up signing like week two, week three, like after the team kind of goes through week one and kind of says, man, we thought this young guy was farther along, or we thought the depth was better here. And so I still think those guys, there's a really good chance they do get claimed. I just don't think it has to be right now. The other thing too with vested veterans, which Van Jefferson and Will Harris both are, you have to guarantee their contract if they're on the roster week one. So I know a lot of teams will wait. That happened to me a couple times in my career where my agent kind of told me like teams are waiting till after week one to potentially pick you up. So again, that's also part of the process, and it's easier for younger players to get picked up. So yeah, it doesn't really surprise me. And again, like I think people forget, like a lot of these guys that look like difference makers here, like there's difference makers on other teams too that kind of are good young football players that are developing. So I think that's also part of the process.
Is it in any way indicative of the overall talent still needing the kind of another offseason or something? You look at like the Eagles, they had four players claimed within the division. Team you're playing on week one, Cameron Williams by the Falcons, Miles Hinton by the Bengals. They had a defensive back and a tight end claimed as well. Like, does that in and of itself in a vacuum suggest anything?
I think it means what I would say is that was like the most by any team in the NFL, I'm pretty sure, right? It was four. So I think it also just shows you just like how, again, that's not a lot of players. That's four players, right? The Philadelphia's roster is good, but also I'd find that teams tend to gravitate towards teams that have success. So like when they're cutting a player, like when the Bills cut a player, when Seattle cuts a player, they tend to get a little bit more visibility. At least that's been my experience. Like I remember even in free agency when I was coming off stuff, like guys from good teams would get better contracts because they associate that player's success with the team's success. So I think there's a lot of factors that kind of spuriously correlate with that, with those signings specifically. But I think one of the things that comes out of that third preseason game is the general lack of depth, right? Like, you know, I think the top two kind of slots, the top 44 guys are pretty decent. We've talked about that when we went through our 53-man roster. Like, that thing looks pretty good in a lot of spots. But I think the kind of the bottom of that group, the bottom seven, you know, if you're getting a 70, so what is that? The bottom 20 guys, you know, probably could be a little bit deeper there. And I think that's just indicative of like where this roster is at currently. And people, I've heard people say this, oh, you know, it's been 3 years since, you know, Ron was here. We got to kind of stop blaming the roster, whatever, whatever. It's just hard. Like when you look at like free agency and the draft, it's hard to accumulate talent super quickly and not overspend. So I think this is all part of the process. Trust the process. And I think we'll get there at some point.
Yeah, I think that that's actually a really good point, because we're talking now not just about like a 53-man roster, right? We're talking about like a 70-man roster or whatever. And it is going to take a little bit longer to do that. I think the 53 is deeper than it's been at any point, like even dating back to Ron. So, yeah, maybe that's going to take a little bit longer. I also know that for me specifically, what I would do if I needed a center is like I would look at the teams that I think are the best at center. You know, so like the Raiders just gave Lindebaum almost $30 million or whatever. And I'm like, did they cut one? And so to that point, I think maybe that, you know, the Eagles are the best at a lot of positions. Like they're very, very deep. And maybe that's how teams think as well. But I also think the reality is it is just an indication. I choose them not because they had the most, but because that's your week one opponent. It's the team that's worn the pants in your division that you're chasing. Like that's, I think, a sign that you got work to do here, which isn't necessarily a shot. It's just the reality of it.
And also, I think what I've experienced, again, just being in this seat and when I played, like when teams are having a system switch, a lot of guys that you wouldn't expect end up getting cut. You know what I mean? So like because we're moving from a gap scheme system or kind of a three-man combination system to Kyle Shanahan outside zone system, you know, Hilton, who is this big, you know, 335-pound tackle, may be less valuable in that system. So we still think he's a good player. Let's try to get him to practice squad. But other gap scheme systems, like, dude, they put him on practice squad. Like, let's get him in here to fit our deal. So I think that's another reason why some, like, better players get cut in there, because you're trying to kind of construct the roster to fit your offensive vision. And I think that's why I think three of the four guys in Philadelphia were offensive players. And so I think that's probably a relevant factor.
Did any of the Commanders that got cut, do you think they were like not fits? Is that a thing for Will Harris maybe here, or like, because you were saying that, I was thinking about Washington as two new schemes, and I don't know that anyone was like an odd man out because of that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, Will Harris, I think, was the odd man out because like Quan played really well. And I think like that's how it goes. You know, he's a little bit of an older player. You want to get younger. You want to kind of take this guy that has a lot of potential and see if you can foster some growth. Like that happened to me, you know, like that's happened to me a bunch of times in my career where you're kind of like, oh, things are going well. You're a little bit more expensive. We could bring in two rookies for the price of one veteran here because you have a veteran minimum salary, which goes up as you play longer. And so I think that like those decisions factor into this. And again, I think Quan just played better. And that's not an indictment of Will Harris. Like, I think he's a good football player. I think he's playing football in 2026 for somebody. It's just there's other variables, there's other factors that kind of weigh into that decision, I think.
Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, Take Command. What did you make of the fact that they did not claim anybody? Now, we don't know for sure that they didn't make an attempt and miss out on players, although it was reported that they didn't claim anyone. Two things here. One, the guys that got claimed at center, and there were a few of them, none of them have career starts, right? So this was not necessarily who was coming in here to like push Nick Allegretti anyway. Mm-hmm. But that having been said, I would have lost a lot of money on them not claiming a single interior offensive lineman the day that all of the IOLs that got cut around the league hit the waiver wire, because we've heard so much about the idea that maybe they would be bolstering the depth externally when the time came. I'll give a thought on this in a second, but I want to see what you think about that first.
Yeah, so I think a couple things here, and I think it's a good question. One, I think it kind of speaks to the lack of like offensive line development in the league. Like these guys aren't getting starts, and like what's the difference between those three or four players that got claimed and Good Jones or Matt Golden? Because like I think there were times this year, like you go back and watch the Miami game, and again, it's Miami, but Matt Golden played really well at center. Like he did a really good job. And so, like, is he ready to start? I don't know. The guys in the building would know better than that. But, like, what's the difference between someone, a young player who has played really well at center, who's in your system, who knows the calls, and someone you're bringing in off the street who's never had a career start? I don't know if there's that much of a difference. Now, like, I'd have to go back and watch the film of those guys when they did play in the preseason. But, like, the guy for the Raiders, Meredith, for example, like, I've heard from multiple people, they just didn't play that well last year. Like, he wasn't, like, you know, so is he the Raiders equivalent of Julian Good-Jones or Matt Golden? I think there's something to that. Like, the lack of consistent offensive line development, I think that also speaks to one of the reasons why the two offensive linemen get claimed from Philadelphia, is because they've done a really good job of identifying, drafting, and developing offensive line talent in-house. And so teams kind of turn to them and be like, oh, you're cutting players, let's bring them in our building and see what this looks like. So I think that's also part of it. But yeah, I just think it's, I think, again, Matt Golden did a good job. It's him being on the 53 is not unwarranted. It's a little bit surprising because he's a young player and he's, you know, one injury away from potentially starting. But I do think, like, that's an important variable for fans and people that maybe don't have access to the All 22 to understand. It's like, he did a good job. And so, like,
sorry, are you when you say he did a really good job, is that game action you're referencing?
Yeah, mostly the preseason stuff. Obviously, yeah. Like, there's the joint practice, which was a little up and down. Like, I wasn't there, but I'm kind of, you know, reacting to stuff Mitch Schuster
said. So that's what I was going to ask is, I actually thought earlier in the preseason, especially like those first couple games when we watched him at center, I remember, you know, we could go back and pull the audio, but it was like, dude, this is working. This is good. Yeah. Let's see him at guard now, because he could probably make the roster. And then he moved over to guard, and frankly, it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. Like, it wasn't impressive. So then you're like, okay, I don't know if he's a lock for the 53, but he certainly makes sense as a backup center, you know, like the third guy on the interior or something. That having been said, the joint practice was a real mess when he got the chance to start, supposedly. So how do you juxtapose that? Like, how do you evaluate the joint practice against a good defense, which was his that was his chance as a starter, versus him as like a two where he looked pretty good in the preseason? How do you make that work?
So this is where, like, I have a hard time with the joint practice. And I don't know if we've talked about this, but like, I've been thinking about it for a couple weeks now. Like, obviously, like, bad snaps show up, right? There's times where you watch one-on-ones and you see offensive linemen get worked. But you've been to enough practices, man. Like, it's hard to, in a joint practice especially, to watch a center. There's just a lot of people on the sideline. There's a lot of stuff in the way. So it's also hard to kind of determine assignment. Like, again, like, I played football for a long time, but there's lots of people that were giving opinions that haven't played a lot of football. So, like, what is good for a center in that context, I think, is kind of hard to determine sometimes. And again, I'm speaking for myself too. Like, there's times where we're on the sideline together and we're watching the same thing and I can't see the center because there's 27 people standing in front of me, right? And you're kind of like, oh, I think that was good or whatever. So again, they have the, like, so I was talking to somebody in the building, not about Golden, but about somebody else. And they brought up four or five plays for this player on defense that no one mentioned about the joint practice. And I was like, why didn't people talk about that? These are amazing football plays. It's just hard to identify what's good sometimes in a joint. Like, you know, John Keim talks about all the time. Like, Ben Standing talks about all the time. You talk about all the time. Like, you're focusing kind of on one thing and then the ball goes someplace else. So to me, again, like, I'm sure there were things that were up and down for him. He's a rookie playing against a very good defensive personnel and a very complicated defense in Baltimore. But, like, how bad or how good was it? I think it's hard to determine without the film. So, like, the coaching staff has a totally different perspective. And so when he's played center, anytime he's played center, Detroit, Miami, even in the Baltimore game, he's looked good. Like, he understands leverages. He understands how to play the position. So was it just a couple of kind of poor plays, or was it like a total dumpster fire? Like, that's something that we don't know. So is that one data point getting blown out of proportion? There's no way to know, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's kind of why I asked the question, though. Let's hypothetically say it was a struggle because the entire offensive line scuffled pretty immensely. And they've talked a lot this offseason about how important the center position is and getting everyone in the right spots. And they had free rushers and some of these things. So let's just say, hypothetically, it wasn't great. Okay. Does that matter as much or more? Like, my point is, when we saw him in the preseason, he was playing against backups and he looked good and he is a backup. So this was your let's level up and go against starters. And let's say hypothetically that the people that were out there and saw it were right, and it wasn't great, let's say. Is it just a sign that, okay, he's a really good second teamer right now, who's not ready for the bright lights? Or I guess my question is, do you care? Like, the team, I'm using their philosophy. They told me how important that practice was for weeks. Are we now going, well, the joint practice isn't as important as the game tape? Like, I guess that's my question.
So I'm not saying that the joint practice isn't important. I'm just saying we can't gauge what it was. So, for example, like a free runner is one thing. That's scheme, that's schematic, that's targeting. But maybe he was fine physically. Maybe he won all of his one-on-ones, or when he did block a guy, even if it was the wrong guy, he got his hat in the right spot. And there was a like, that's the one thing that's impressed me about him, honestly, and I'm kind of extrapolating again from backups and from what we've seen in practice to this joint practice, just in terms of the player and what I've seen from him, is he's got a good feel for anchor, leverage. There's a physicality to him that plays, right? So if you have that physical box checked, the other mental stuff, if you trust the player, can come along, right? So like, hey, there's a free runner that looks like poop, quite frankly, right? That's not good. But if we can get him coached up and get him direct, it's the same thing with Togiai. Like, Togiai flashed a physical aptitude that some of the other guards on the roster didn't flash with. So there's a minimum physical threshold that needs to be met. And I feel like Golban and Togiai both met it. Now, there's a mental element here too that needs to be acknowledged and is not insignificant. So to me, in the joint practice, if there was some good physicality to him and he kind of showed some of the same qualities he showed in practice and in the Miami game, we can work with that. We just got to get you directed and targeted versus a defense that's very complicated, right? So that's one of the reasons why week one, I'm a little worried about him starting, because I do think there is a big mental jump from college to the NFL. And I do think that was what the joint practice showed. Now, but if he physically is doing well and he's physically kind of handling the matchups at a high level, I can work with that. We can work with that. We can find a way to get this thing to a point where he maybe is ready to go. And so again, that's the thing I don't know. And that's the only people who do know are the people in the building at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they have an opinion that they think they're set. And the beauty of this thing is games are coming. So,
well, so I'd say this too, dude, like you say that, but I don't know if they like the thing about this. Well,
they
staff,
said so in their press conference yesterday.
What did they say? What's the quote? Do you have a quote? I'm sorry.
They said they have a lot of confidence in the guys they have and they feel good about the center position.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Bro, dude. So how many times have you heard people say that about every position and someone good becomes available? And like, oh, well, that guy's better. Let's bring him
well,
in.
Well, of course.
That happens all the time.
But what are we supposed to base our opinion on then? If we can't use their comments, their actions have been they haven't added anybody.
I'm just saying, bro, like, you've been around this thing long enough and I've been around it long enough to know that, like, yes, they're saying things in that environment that are to build up and create confidence in the locker room and in the team.
But
if a better player becomes available, or if there's an opportunity for a better player, they're going to be like, yeah, man, he's good. Let's go get that guy. Like, that's just how it goes.
Well, no kidding. Yeah, of course. But they also, their actions.
So don't be like, of course, because you just were like, oh, they did it. It's like, it's the game that they play every year, man.
No. But you're saying two different things. My point is, I think they are perfectly content going into the season with their center position. They have had months to do something about it. They had an entire free agency to sign somebody else. They didn't do it.
And they tried to sign somebody else, though. That's the thing. They tried to sign Tyler Linderbaum.
For $30 million.
So obviously they feel some type of way about the position.
Yeah, but that was the first couple of days of free agency. They then had dozens of guys that signed that weren't $30 million players. They chose not to bring any of them in. They've said a million times they like Allegretti as a starter. Do you agree? Do you not think they do?
I think they do, yeah.
Yeah.
I think like with every football thing, if someone better became available, would they not sign that guy?
Yes, but I think that's a different thing than saying you're comfortable with the guys on your roster.
You're comfortable with the guy. You're always comfortable, but you always want to get better. I think that's like you're kind of talking out of both. Like that, you're as a coach and as an organization, you're always kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth, because you have to kind of show that, like, speaking as a player, right? That was in the room. Like, you have to kind of say, "Oh yeah, we feel great with Logan Paulson." But I know, I'm not an idiot. Like, they want Vernon Davis. They want Jordan Reed. They want... And so if one of those players becomes available, they're going to sign that guy. Like, that's just how it works. And so and this is the other thing too. I will say, like, Allegretti, I went back and watched all of his center snaps from last year, did a good job. It's two games. It's a small sample size, but he did a fine job at center, right? So I do understand why there's a confidence in him. Now, the thing that you brought up about the depth is something that I think is interesting. I think Golban physically played well enough. The question is he mentally ready? And so when they say that we feel good about it, I understand. I can kind of put myself in their shoes and be like, okay, this is why they're saying this, right? But objectively, like, could you say, hey, man, we want more experience? I'm sure there are people that feel that way. But I do think that you feel good about where Matt Golban's at. Do you feel good about him starting week one? I don't know. That's a different question, in my opinion.
But he's not starting week one. Allegretti was back at practice yesterday. That's their starter. Golban's their backup. And what I was trying to say is that I think they feel okay about that. And my point is, when the games start, if this is their roster, we'll evaluate them as they're either going to win or lose the games, and the centers are going to play well or they're not. And that's going to be the point. I mean, they had an offseason to do something. This is what they've chosen. And my point is, if Allegretti plays, like, the hysteria about center is all about, what if Allegretti's not out there? Well, Allegretti's already out there practicing, and they're 12 days away from the game. So he's going to be ready for week one. Now, if he struggles all year as their starter, then they bet wrong on Allegretti. They were wrong about that. If Allegretti goes down in the second snap because his calf barks and they've got to elevate Golban and he's not ready, then they should have had a backup veteran that they didn't bring in. And by the way, I still think they might bring in a backup veteran. So no, I'm not suggesting they're not going to bring someone in. I think you always bring people in. They could bring in a wide receiver. It doesn't mean they didn't like their wide receiver room. I think both can be true. They're perfectly content going into the season with what they have. And I think you're always looking to get better at every position.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I just think I think Allegretti, if he's healthy, will be fine. Right. And I think that the one is I think Golban did some good stuff physically. And so that's the one where I understand there's the consternation about if Allegretti's not ready, is Golban ready? And, usually there's someone else on the roster that can snap or kind of offload some of that responsibility from the young player, but it doesn't seem to be. So he seems like he's got a very direct line. So, we were talking, in the production meeting about Good Jones is still competing for this, whatever kind of for snaps. And I do think that there's some truth to that, right? Because Golban has to ultimately show me that, if Allegretti isn't ready, that he's ready to go. And I think that that's something that only the coaches can determine. But I do think that, it sounds like coach speak, but I think there is some truth to that.
Take Command. We will get into some of your burning questions next.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.